Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. We were kind of surprised last hour that we didn't have a single call. And evidently, we have figured out now that our phone system is down. So we are really stuck right now, but we're working on it. The engineers have been called. Fire trucks have been sent for them. We hear sirens in the background. But there's no way around this. I can't put you on the air if I were to give you a backline to the studio. I couldn't put you on the air. I suppose you could email us, and we could do something about that. Renee, would you go in and just open up my computer, and I'll give my email address, and then you're going to kind of print it, and we'll take those kinds of calls. So my email address is pretty easy. It's Mark. @SalemBoysAuto.com. Mark@SalemBoysAuto.com. Hey, Gil, let me ask you a question. Can you call out and bring up a person?
Oh, I believe I can. Yeah, if you can give me a number.
Yeah,
I'll call them.
That's what we'll do. That's what we'll do. You can email us a phone number, and we'll call you. So the email is mark@salemboysauto.com, mark@salem, like the cigarette, boys, B-O-Y-S, auto.com. Renee will give that. She'll bring it in here. We'll give Gil, she'll call Gil and give him the number, and we'll go from there. Eddie, would you go in and tell Renee what our plan is?
Sure.
And so she'll get the phone number, and she'll give it. She needs to call Gil on his cell phone, and his cell phone is in my phone, so take my phone.
Okay.
And so she'll call Gil and give him the number, and then Gil will call the customer, and then we'll have the old ring-dinger, and he has a horn or something like that that he can notify us. So this is Fred Flintstone at its finest.
All right, let me back.
You know about cars and phones?
Yeah, we're learning all about cars and phones. So tell Renee that's the plan, and it'll take three of us to put this show on. But we'll talk about cars for a few minutes, and we recognize now that we have a problem, and it's all our problem. But I just want to give you a couple of hints that I'm often offered people that have saved them money, and they've been gracious enough to call me back and tell me that I've saved them money. And I want you to know that what I'm telling you applies to me, my shop, and everybody I know. It applies to our industry, and it's not rules that I made up, but I was able to put them into words that is very important for the consumer. For instance, everybody understands that it's very difficult when you take your car in and you give them symptoms, and the shop has to find out what's wrong with it. That's called the diagnostic procedure. Now, Eddie actually is an ASE Master Certified Technician, as I am, and Eddie's been working at our repair facility for years and years and years, 29, I think it is.
Yeah, coming up on 29.
And the diagnostic process, so here's my answer, here's my question. The diagnostic process, regardless of whether it's an oil leak, or my car stalls in the morning, or my car races, or my car hiccups, or we have a check engine light, we have an ABS light, we have a traction control light, we have any dash lights, it can be from what to what in dollars. We're going to speak dollars, not hours.
It could be anywhere from, I could talk about one yesterday in a little while, it could be anywhere from free to thousands of dollars.
To find it. To find it and track
it. To find it. Well, okay, free, we'll start with free. And then typically to find it, we're looking at about 100, 125, and then we'll tell the customer if we can't determine what the problem is in that time frame, then we form a game plan and say, this is what we need to do. This is how much we're going to spend up to try and find it. It's always, there's a window.
Okay.
So we just go in there and let the customer know that, okay, in the first hour we weren't able to find it, but we're pretty confident.
In the first 100.
Right.
All right. Go ahead.
So couldn't find it in the first 100, but we're pretty confident that in another 100, 150, we'll be able to find it. If we can't, then we're going to stop, and we're either going to just say it's going to have to be more consistent, or something else is going to have to happen, or we can make an educated guess with your money, and we're going to let them know that right up front, that in the cars that we've seen and the symptoms you have, this predominantly is what the fix is, most likely.
But we just can't find the root. Now, you just gave a worst-case scenario. Would you agree?
Right.
Because you were talking $200, $300, $400 in the diagnostic side. How many times, give me the range, dollars, that you've charged? Now, in our shop, it's very similar to every other shop in town. The technician typically drives that number,
uh-huh.
his skill level and stuff like that. So, certainly, on the low side, give me a low-side diagnostic.
I would say $50.
Okay, and give me an example. You said you had an example that you had not too long ago.
Yesterday, someone brought in a 2006 Honda Odyssey.
Okay.
And the sliding power doors would not operate. They would not operate with the switch on the dash, would not operate with the key fob, would not operate with the handles on the inner or outer doors.
Okay. I don't have a clue. I mean, you'd go back to basics and look at the power supply.
There's a master switch on the dash, and it was turned off.
Hmm. So what'd you charge for that?
Nothing.
But it would have been an appropriate thing because you're a seasoned guy. Let's assume that the guy that on a 1 to 10 scale, if you're a 10, let's assume the guy was a 6 that was assigned that.
Okay.
It would take him a while. He'd go in and he'd start looking at power and ground circuits, yes?
Right, he might check the fuses first.
Yes, bingo. So you're going to take out your 12-volt test light or your 12-volt digital volt ohmmeter, and you're going to start checking fuses. But don't you have to open up the owner's manual to find out where the fuse is at? Because sometimes cars have 2 and 3 panels.
Yes.
And how long is it going to take you? You start the car and you turn everything on that you can, and you have to go through and check power on both sides of every fuse.
Every
fuse. And so if the car has 3 fuse panels in it, is it not likely, correct me if I'm wrong, that you might have to check 50 fuses?
Yes. And first of all, you need to find out where they're at. And what we deal with a lot of times is there aren't owner's manuals in these vehicles.
I wasn't going to go there. Or it's hidden, or they never got one, or whatever. I wasn't going to go. Now, we have software to back that up.
Right. We can go on with our programs and find out where the fuses are at.
Where the fuse panels are
right.
at. And then where the fuses are at. So this is one where, how did you figure out that the switch on the dash was off?
Well, the gentleman that brought it in wasn't the owner of the vehicle.
Okay.
He was bringing it in for a friend. And, you know, I tried the doors. Yeah, they didn't work. And I saw the switch on the dash, and I see sliding doors, and it said on, and there was... And so I just flipped the switch, and all of a sudden, as I flipped the switch, I saw a painted red dot on the switch.
Okay.
So I tried the doors, and they worked.
Okay.
So maybe inadvertently it got switched off at a car wash or someone when someone was cleaning the inside of the vehicle. I don't know.
Okay.
I took the customer out, and I said, this is the master switch for the doors. I said, when it's on, you need to have this red dot on, and that's just... It's the same as if on the safety on your firearm.
Mm-hmm.
He said, oh, I know all about that. I'm ex-military, so I'll know that now.
Okay. And let me give you an example of something that's similar to that. We worked on a black Escalade, and the lady had said that it's absolutely important that I have this Escalade back by 6 o'clock closing. So we worked on it diligently, and we fixed the problem. So we're getting ready to deliver it to her. And the technician had said that obviously this lady was about 2 feet tall because the seat was within inches of the steering wheel.
Right.
And the pedals and everything were for obviously. Now, that's a difficult thing for technicians to deal with because of this reason. The problem is that you might be 6'4" and you need to get into this car. How are we going to put the seat back the way we found it? And that's difficult at best.
Right.
So what happens is the technician pulls it around, who worked on it, and goes to put the seat back where it was, and it doesn't go back where it was. It doesn't move. And we're in really big trouble because she needs this at 6 o'clock.
Uh-huh.
So we call her and tell her we've got this problem that the seat doesn't work. And so we go into master... panic. And so Adam's out there, I'm out there, Sean's out there, and we're trying to figure this thing out. The first thing we do is pull the owner's manual out, and it has 3 fuse panels. Now we can't figure out that there's not really a fuse for the seats and the mirrors and the pedals, all of those.
Okay.
So you already know the answer because I can tell by the look on your face. So we go in and we look at the wiring diagram, and they all end up at the front seat module. And the front seat module has a fuse. So there's no fuse for the steering wheel. There's no fuse for the seat. There's no fuse for the pedals or the mirrors. They all come out of the module that runs that entire driver's side. So we test the fuse, and it lights both sides.
Okay.
And then all of a sudden everything starts working. So we pull the fuse out, and there's a little corrosion on it. We clean that up. We go get a new fuse. We plug it in, and we mess around with it, in and out, in and out, in and out, move it around. We did everything we could, and we couldn't get it not to work again. So we just put the car back together. We delivered it to our house, and we said, we're really sorry for the delay, but this fuse caused the problem.
Right.
And we weren't even in that direction. We weren't even there. We just never were there. But I suspect that she's the primary driver, and nobody had moved any of that for 100 years. So the technician gets in, and he rolls the seat all the way to the back. He drops the pedals down, and he lifts the steering wheel away from the seat. During that period of time, we probably exercised a circuit that hadn't been lit in a long time.
Right.
And the demand of moving all those motors probably caused the corrosion to raise its ugly head. In spite of that, we wouldn't have had three or four guys working on it, but one guy would have picked that up within the first 40 minutes, I would imagine.
Yes. And they're actually using that module as a central hub for communication for all those devices.
Exactly. Exactly. So it was a difficult thing. So from the average point of view, with dollars, not hours, but dollars, because, folks, the reason why I don't want to talk hours is because everybody has a different hourly rate. There's a dealer in town that starts at $85 for the first hour. So he kicks everybody's butt when it comes to, if you call around for a labor rate, you're going to go, oh, well, he's $85. That's fine, but it's $144 after that. So you get the first hour for $85, and everything after that's $144. Well, the average in our area is $121 of the 30 or 40 shops in our area. Andy, my daughter, does that analysis. We do everybody's labor rate. And I think the average in our area is $121.
And so that's the independents and the dealers?
Yeah, everybody. Tire stores, independents, dealers, everybody in our geographical area. What's our labor rate?
118.
Okay, because I thought we were under the average. They had picked 118 to be slightly under the average. In spite of the fact that we think we're a little over the average, we're still billing it under the average.
Yes.
And that's the common perception that I'm faced with all the time, is people look at us and think we're expensive. They do that to a lot of shops. It's just we're not the only guys in town. Greg down the street, he has a nice shop. And people look at him and they think, oh, he's naturally expensive. And that really isn't the truth. So from my question to you is simple. From a global point of view, what's the average dollar you spend on diagnostics of vibrations, of oil leaks, of check engine lights, of ABS lights, air conditioning, sometimes blow through the center vent, approximately? Give me some kind of a window of diagnostic money.
I would say, if I had to break it all down, 75 to 150.
Okay. And how often do you exceed 150?
Maybe 10% of the time.
Okay. How many times a month do you exceed 150?
Well, it really depends on the car load, but I would say 3 or 4.
Okay. All
it's
right.
Not that often.
How many times a month do you exceed 200?
Maybe once.
Okay. All right. And because you do the majority of our diagnostic work, along with Jason and along with Scott and along with Ron, but the load of the diagnostic is oftentimes on your shoulder. That's just kind of the parameters I wanted. I'm not coaching you. You know,
yes.
They don't know that, but you and I both know. I'm not coaching you. But just for the diagnostic purposes. So when we come back, we'll talk more about that. We'll be back right after this. Well, welcome back, everybody. 20 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, we're having phone problems down at the studio. And folks, I'm not upset about this because our equipment has caused problems over the last year. And just recently, we dumped a bunch of our equipment because we transmit to this radio station, and then they transmit it over to you. And we just recently purchased some new equipment, and we hope that will fix the problem on our end. But this is the first time since we've been here since 2011 that KKNT has crashed, and their phone system has evidently crashed. So we're working on this. Here's how you can get on the phone and have a car question. This is how you do it. You send an email to mark at SalemBoysAuto.com. My wife will get that email at mark@SalemBoysAuto.com. All we need is your name and your phone number. Then Renee's going to call Gil's cell phone. He's the engineer. And Gil's going to call you. And so then Gil can put you on the radio because he's calling you. And so the incoming lines are somewhat defective, but the outgoing lines aren't. So as a result of that, Gil can call you and then pot you up, so to speak, in radio lingo, and we'll go from there. So, Eddie, well, first of all, let me tell you about Automatic Transmission Exchange. Automatic Transmission Exchange has been in Phoenix for a very long time. As a matter of fact, he's one of the oldest businesses in Phoenix at 1968 in the car repair industry under the same ownership. Phil and his staff work on transmissions. They diagnose them, they repair them, they replace them. They have a transmission dynamometer, which means they can actually test the operation of your transmission before they put it in, which is really nice because everybody else has to put it in and then find out they did something wrong and take it back out, which is going to hang your car up for a couple days. So every transmission is thoroughly tested if they have to take it out. So if you live in Central Phoenix, Automatic Transmission Exchange is located at 40th Street in Washington, and it's a pretty doggone good transmission shop. Eddie is a master tech. I'm a master tech. We work together. It's not important where we work. But the idea is I was talking about when you take your car in, it's a good idea to ask for parameters for this diagnostic time.
Right.
And so I think the industry is going to – everybody's going to settle on 50 on the low side to 125, maybe 150 on the high side. Yes?
That's pretty fair.
Okay. I'm trying to cover 75 to 90% of our industry. There's going to be some guys that are going to go 50 and then turn around and hit you between the eyes with a big one. There's going to be some guys that are going to set the worst-case scenario on the 150 and will call you after that. But the idea is that diagnostic's going to lead to a repair estimate.
Correct.
So it's a three-part deal. It's diagnostic, then the part and the labor to fix your problem. Unless, of course, we fix the problem when we do the diagnosis.
And that happens. And then also, sometimes there's a portion of that diagnostic charge that can go towards the repair. Let's say you've got an air conditioning leak.
Okay.
And we think it might be the evaporator.
Okay. Which is underneath the dash behind the glove box.
And so we physically, if we can, want to lay eyes on that. So we may have to pull out the blower motor and the blower resistor. So if we see that, okay, we get to where we can see the evaporator, we haven't taken it out, but we can see through a window of the ductwork that, yes, it's leaking.
Leaking oil, which means it's a Freon leak.
Right.
Okay.
Now some of that diagnostic labor where we had to pull the blower and that stuff out, that can go towards repair because that's already out.
There should be a credit on the evaporator all by itself. So the evaporator pays 2.1 hours. So we're going to charge you 2.1 hours to replace the evaporator, but we're also going to discount 3/10 of an hour for the blower motor or half an hour for the blower motor. So another example of fixing it during the diagnostic process is you've got a lien code, a computer. You got a check engine light with a lien code.
Okay.
By the time you find the lien code, there's a good chance you've already fixed it.
Yes.
And finding it means I found the vacuum line that's been yanked off. I found the vacuum line that broke off. I found the EGR valve is stuck open. I found that the fuel filter's plugged up. I found that. And so it's kind of like I'm going to charge you $100 to find it and $1 to fix it, right?
That happens, a lot, especially with those kind of symptoms. Because we have to go when we're looking at fuel trims. And, okay, well, so we find a vacuum leak.
Wait a minute. Fuel trims is a gauge that shows that the engine predominantly has been running with the abundance of fuel versus the lack of fuel.
Right, and the baseline is zero.
Okay, and it's also, and when we look at fuel trims, we can look at long-term and short-term fuel trims. So we can look at right now, and then we can look at last week or for the last 5 days.
That's correct.
So the fuel trims, if we have a right now lean condition, and it's not showing up on the big picture of the fuel trims over the last week, we know it's something recent.
Correct.
And we know it's something that just happened. So I'm trying to draw the picture, but you go ahead.
Yeah, so we're looking at fuel trims. Our short terms are skewed to the positive, which means we have a lean condition because it's adding fuel.
Absence of fuel.
Right.
Okay.
So we may smoke test the air induction system or just visually look around or and some places you can just spray some brake clean and watch your fuel trims and listen to the idle. The idle goes up, fuel trims go down. We know that we can concentrate in that area where sometimes we can't even see, but we know that all of a sudden we've ingested some fuel and we made a difference, and now we focus in on that area. So it could be a split in the upper intake. It could be a bad intake gasket. It could be a hose that's split or a hose that's off.
Right. We're artificially inseminating the engine with fuel.
Uh-huh.
We expect to see that rise. We see the RPMs rise, and we see the fuel trim change when we get to the leak.
Correct.
So we're looking for the leak. We can use propane, brake fluid, carb cleaner. We could use whiskey in a spray bottle. You know what I'm saying? You're laughing, but you could.
Right.
You could use alcohol.
Well, I just thought of Ron when you said whiskey and spray bottle.
Don't say that.
I'm just teasing.
He'll come and he'll hunt us down. He'll hunt us down. So we have a technician, Ron, and he has an empty whiskey bottle on his toolbox. And everybody wants to know the story behind it, and he won't tell us. And so it's got to be a good story, so
yes,
someday he'll tell us. Nevertheless, so we've got this diagnostic process that there's going to be an estimate on. What percentage of the estimates are you going to go past the original number you gave? And let's assume that the original number you gave was 75 to 125. What percentage exceed the 125?
Well, I really can't unless we okay it with the customer first.
No, no. What percentage are you going to ask for more money?
Oh, afterwards.
Yes.
Oh, I would say maybe 30%.
Okay, so a third of them you're going to ask for more. So tell me on the cap on the second request for money, for diagnostic money. That's 125 is going to grow to approximately what of those 30%? Are you going to go over 200?
2 minutes.
Yes, yes.
Okay, so 30% of them are going to go over 200.
Yes.
Okay, and what percentage, I mean, keep going. Is 30% of them going to be over 2.25?
Well, then it drops down drastically after you, I mean, once you get past the $200 mark. Because really, if you haven't an idea where to go or formed a game plan in that the first $200, then
you're going to swim for a long time.
Yeah, you may not really know what you're actually looking for.
And here's the issue: when you go into the shop, you have to ask that question. If we get deep into this diagnostic process, what happens if you can't find it?
Right, and a lot of times you have to eat your labor. You're just, you know, you'll charge them the original 125, and we said, you know what, we worked on it for another $150, we didn't find it, so we're going to scale that back and just charge you
Quoted you on the front side. And that typically is because we can't get the symptom to duplicate.
Correct.
We can't get the car to act up in front of us.
Minute.
So you have, the conversation with the customer is you have no choice. We have to start guessing with your money, or we're going to wait till it gets worse and easier to find. Those are the only two options.
Right.
There is no other option. All right. As far as the shop in front of you is concerned. So if the shop, no matter who the shop is, the shop says to you, you have two choices. I can't duplicate. And that's the biggest problem we have.
Right.
Is the problem in the car happens on Tuesdays at 11 o'clock. Or it happens cold in the morning, so you leave it overnight and it doesn't happen to us. Or it happens after I've driven on the freeway for 50 miles. Well, that's $50 right there for us to go drive your car. So if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. And we're going to have a lot of equipment hooked up to it. So we're watching fuel trims. We've got our scanners. We've got all that kind of stuff, fuel pressure and stuff like that. So those are the issues. If you want to talk, go to Mark at MarkSalem.com. Leave your phone number and your name. Mark at MarkSalem.com. Well, welcome back, everybody. We're having phone troubles, and I apologize for that. There's just nothing we can do about it, but we have a workaround. Here's the workaround. You go on and you send an email to mark@salemboysauto.com. My wife is sitting at my desk, and we transmit from our building. We've been transmitting from this building since 1988, so it's something that we've done. It's comfortable for us, and it's closer to our home, and it's easier for us. So anyway, my wife's sitting at my desk at work. If you send an email to mark@marksalem.com, then give us your name and your phone number. Then Renee's going to call Gil's cell phone, and he's going to call you from the radio station, and then we're going to talk. You and I are going to talk. So that's the only thing we've got to offer. But we're talking about diagnostic time, and we're talking about what customers can say in the self-defense for car expense mode. Okay?
All right.
So I tell people all the time, guessing is an acceptable thing on an attempted repair unless it's represented as a fix and it turns out to be a guess.
That's correct.
There's a difference.
Right.
A fix and a guess. So I tell folks, and I have for years and years and years, and this represents the industry that I know of that's a good part of the industry. There's always this fringe group that plays doesn't play by the rules. So I would say that fringe group could be as little as 10% and could be as much as 25% of our industry.
Right.
I think the overwhelming majority of us are honest and good people, and we don't have problems like
that.
Yeah,
and unfortunately, I mean, a lot of it sometimes is demographics. There are some portions of the United States where that the use of scare tactics and unethical repairs is clustered in certain areas, and I really don't know why that is.
Oh, and I don't either. I don't either. I think it's just a habit that's ignored by management, or perhaps management doesn't have the skills necessary to identify those habits. We have people in our industry that used to be telephone repairmen, nothing wrong with telephone repairmen, that have become owners of auto repair shops. Likewise, it would be the same as if an auto repair guy became an expert in the telephone repair business.
Right.
It doesn't translate well. So anyway, so I tell people, and they hold my shop in the same kind of light. You come in and you get a diagnostic money, and then when they call you back, you say, is this a guess or a fix? Because if we're guessing, I want to know whose guess money we're guessing with, yours or mine. The shop, are you guessing with your money or are you guessing with my money? There is an appropriate time to guess.
Yes.
And I can give hundreds of examples. You have a problem that sounds like, smells like a fuel pump problem. I noticed your gas gauge is at less than a quarter. Do you usually drive it that way? Yes, I do. Okay, I want you to fill it up and I want you to run off the top fourth of the tank and see if there's a difference. So they go out and they do that, and they call you back and say, yes, there's a difference. Haven't they helped us right there?
Yes, absolutely.
Because the fuel pump in most cars today is in the fuel tank, and it's cooled and lubricated by the gas in the tank. But the high school and the college kids who run off the bottom fourth of the tank expose the fuel pump to no lubrication and no cooling. And as a result of that, oftentimes the fuel pump takes a beating.
Yes.
So if we have you fill up the car, or if you walked in the door and said, I've got this problem when I'm down below a quarter, and it goes away once I fill it up, wow, wouldn't we love that?
Yes.
Wouldn't we love that? Now, that might be a situation where you say, bring it back when it's a quarter or less. We hook a fuel pressure gauge to it, and we go drive it. And if we experience it and the fuel pressure drops, boom, we're done. Right?
Yep.
The customer's done their diagnostic. They've saved themselves a lot of money. Through constant education with the shop. But the idea is there's an appropriate time to guess.
Absolutely. And typically, we do it when it's something that's going to leave you stranded, or here in Arizona, a comfort issue. If we have an AC issue and you run the AC for 30 minutes and all of a sudden it stops and it's not blowing cold at all, all of a sudden you get ambient air, that might be something we guess on, because a mom, she's got three kids and it's 120 degrees outside, all of a sudden the inside of the vehicle is 110 degrees and they're sweating bullets.
But it wouldn't be we were going to guess on an $800 compressor.
No.
It'd be a low pressure switch or a high pressure switch, or we might wire around the climate control switch.
Yes.
And we would do something like that we would charge for in an effort to isolate the problem. But it's not like we're going to say, oh, we're going to put a compressor in there and we're hoping that's going to fix it for $800 or $900. That's not going to happen.
Right.
So it's going to be something that's technical, more of a technical. So you put in a low-pressure switch, which has the ability to do exactly what the symptoms are doing.
To cycle the air conditioning and turn it off.
Exactly. And so we're going to replace that with a new one, and your gamble here is less than $100.
Oh, yes.
So we're going to do that. So it's really important that our industry identify who's guessing with whose money. Now, there's been times, I'm going to admit, there's been times that we've guessed with our money and we've lost.
Yes.
and there's times that my staff has thumped their chest and said, oh, we got this, and they didn't get it. So there's been times that I've had to eat those kinds of repairs. So it just goes with the territory. It goes with the territory. Have you ever screwed up a car that I've had to pay for?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Can you tell me which one?
I'm trying to think. There was a Bronco I backed into the overhead door. Because I was at that point, I was on the east side of the building, so it was early in the morning, the sun was shining through, so I lowered the door so I wasn't facing the glare of the sun. Then I got in to back it out, and I forgot that I had the door down, and
and you scrape the roof off of it. Yeah, I remember that one. But that was one that you couldn't deny.
Right.
Right? It was just everybody in the shop heard you hit the door. So what? But when we come back, what about a guess that you took that didn't turn out well, or a diagnosis that you took that didn't turn out well?
Okay.
That's what we're going to talk about. So email is Mark with a K, mark@marksalem.com. Put your phone number and your name. That Renee, my wife, will pick that up off of my PC on my desk. She's going to call Gil, the engineer, and Gil's going to call you and put you on the air. Then he's going to say in my headphones, I've got Phil on the air for you. And that's how we're going to do it, because we don't have any other way to do it right now. We've got a phone problem down at the studio, and we're working around it. So we'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Our phone system is down, and so we're trying a variety of ways to get you on the air if you have a car question, and we apologize for the we apologize. It's all there is we can do. We apologize on behalf of KKNT and Mark Salem. We're really sorry. Here's what we want to try. We're going to try something different. We're going to go to a different email address, and the email address is talk, T-A-L-K, the number 2, and my last name, Salem, at AOL.com. Talk, the number 2, Salem, at AOL.com. So you'd write down your phone number and your name, and then we're going to get that to the radio station. They're going to call you and put you on the air, and then they'll tell me in my ear. They'll say, hey, we've got Eddie on line 3, and I'll pull you up. Let me tell you about S&S Tire. S&S Tire is on the west side. I respect the people that own S&S Tires. I know that they are a good part of our industry. They're not the kind of industry that we're talking about right now, which is the 25%er. And so those are the important things as far as I'm concerned. But they have three locations, and they've been around since 1976. They have three locations, one in Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. They have the most comprehensive groups of tires that I've ever seen in this respect. You can take your car, your truck, your motorhome. You can take anything to S&S, and they'll give you three prices. That's out-the-door pricing for six tires, and that's mounted and balancing, FET, and sales tax, and they'll give you three, so it's good, better, best, and you can decide what suits you. Now, they have wheelbarrow to tractors and everything in between, so that's S&S Tire, three locations, West Valley, Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear, and I know they're honest and dependable, and they're not going to take advantage of you. So we're talking about you making a guess that you thought was a diagnosis. We've all done that.
Right.
And it didn't turn out that way.
Yeah, this was a mid-70s Ford. It had an aftermarket distributor.
Wait a minute. You're already forgiven. It was a Ford?
Okay.
You're already forgiven. I'm teasing you. Go ahead.
It was, aftermarket distributor. It was a little bit of a hot rod car. And when it got warm, it would misfire and buck and spit. And so in my diagnosis, I was looking at the signal to the ignition coil, and it was erratic. So I said, well, it needs a distributor.
Okay.
So the customer okayed the distributor, put the distributor in, and a half hour later, it was doing the same thing.
Okay.
Well, it turned out to be the ignition coil itself.
Okay.
The circuit in the coil intermittently would go open, and I interpreted that as a loss of signal from the distributor.
Okay, so in a nutshell, the distributor talks to the coil,
mm-hmm.
and so the signal looked defective from the signal to the coil, but in reality, the coil was crashing, and it was contaminating the signal.
That's
right?
It.
Right?
Correct.
Okay, go.
Yeah, so
how'd you unwind that deal?
Well, I had to pull the distributor out, put his old distributor back in. We sold him an ignition coil, adjusted the labor for the coil versus the distributor,
Okay. And
we just had to hold on to the distributor, and
we should probably still have it.
Yeah.
So is it a Mallory or is it?
Yeah, it was a Mallory.
Okay. So
yeah.
We have one in inventory. That's okay. That's okay. It's called a test part.
Yes.
That's what it's called. It's a test part from now on. That happens to us once or twice a year for
yep.
sure. There's no question. I'm paying for that once or twice a year. That's just all there is to it. Our industry, I'd say 75% of our industry would do just exactly that. I'd say 25% would say, oh, it needed a distributor and a coil.
Right.
And I think that that's kind of... Now, the self-defense mechanism for that is I want my old parts back.
Right.
Okay? So if you want your old parts back and you really think that they may have taken advantage of you, you could pay somebody else to put a coil on it. So put the old coil back on it. right?
Correct.
Now, the coil, to put it back on it, to swap the coil would cost what in dollars at most shops?
$30.
That's exactly the number I was going to say, $30. So $30 to swap the coil. So you put the old coil back on, you take the new one, you put it in your pocket or put it in your glove box, and all of a sudden it starts acting up again. So you put the coil back on, the new coil back on, and maybe you swap the distributor. That's a little bit more than $30.
Yes.
Okay. So then you find out it runs fine with a new coil. That's a dilemma. Yeah. There's other times that it's easier than that, but this description is kind of tough.
Right. I mean, and there are some times where there is more than one part that needs replaced in to repair the vehicle. But, you know, you're always a little leery when, well, it needed this, but then now it needs this, and now it needs this. But typically it's, well, the ones we see are the blower resistor is burnt up. Well, it needs a blower resistor because it doesn't even work. But you have to be able to forewarn the customer that typically blower resistors don't go out just by themselves. It's because the blower motor is bad and it's drawing too much current through the resistor. So we tell them we can't get the blower motor to work because the resistor is bad. So we need to put a resistor on it first to get the blower motor work. Then we can do some amp draws on the current going to the blower motor and see, is it drawing too much current? Is this why we burnt up the original blower resistor?
Okay, Mr. Big Shot, what's the motor going to blow? Or what's the motor going to draw in amps?
Well, it depends on the speed.
Okay.
We'll say high speed.
Okay. I was going to try to trick you. Go ahead. Go ahead. All right, let's go low and high.
Well, let's say we got four speeds.
Okay.
Okay. So we'll start with the highest and go down the lowest. So
Okay. We're
probably, there's really going to be two specs for each speed. Well,
okay.
at least one for high, because
I'm going to guess the high.
Okay.
All right. And you got your number in your head?
Yeah.
I'm thinking 15 to 20 amps on the top end, because it's probably a 20 amp or less circuit.
Right.
So I'm at 15 or 20. On low side, I'm thinking we're going to be 5, 6, 7 to 10, right?
Right.
So that's kind of a universal
thing. Exactly. And what I was going to say is, let's say your fan is set on high already, and it doesn't come on until you turn your mode switch from off to floor or whatever. We're going to have that initial kick.
Yep.
When we start the blower motor. So we're going to see our current spike up to maybe 17 amps. And then once we get to cruising speed, then we're going to drop down to about 50 or
right.
15.
Let me explain that in radio terms. When you're pushing on a car, it's harder to get it moving than keep it moving.
Right.
Right?
Exactly.
So as we're pushing the car through the shop, then it's harder to get it to moving than keep it moving. Mm-hmm. All right. So that, and I'll give you another example. You used a blower motor resistor. I'm going to give a better example, I think. The blower switch.
Okay.
Because it's a 1-2-3. Battery feeds the switch, the blower switch, and the blower switch feeds the motor. So if the motor starts drawing heavy amps, it has to go through the switch.
Correct.
And that switch is going to take a beating because it's only designed to handle 15 amps or so, and all of a sudden the blower motor is sucking 22, 25 amps. Well, all that electricity has to go through the blower switch.
Mm-hmm.
So almost always, it's going to fail, and you have to leave that door wide open. Now, there's no duplication of labor on that. So the blower motor is over by the glove box.
Right.
But the mode switch, the fan switch, is in the center of the dash.
Yep.
There is no duplication there. But the resistor and the blower motor are oftentimes right next to one another.
Very close to each other.
So if you're going to sell them a resistor and a blower motor, there probably is not going to be a significant amount of add-on labor. You'll have the resistor and a little bit of labor.
Mm-hmm.
But you won't have big time labor. You won't have the R&R remove and replace all by itself. Right?
And that blower switch scenario is the classic killing the messenger.
Yes.
Is that yes, the switch is bad, but it's not because the switch is bad, it's because the blower motor is bad.
You bring up a great point, because oftentimes we see the switch is bad because it took a beating because the blower motor is sucking too much electricity. So you replace the switch, but it's just gonna go out again. So if that happens, the shop has two choices. I need to put a blower motor in it. Let's see how that lasts. Or they're going to say, oh, the switch was bad, and they put another one in it.
Right.
And that's kind of not what it's supposed to happen. You're supposed to be smarter than that. If you put a name brand switch in it, then it probably shouldn't go bad.
Right. If the first switch lasted 15 years and the switch you just put in lasted 15 days.
Or 3 months or four months or 5 months, depending on whether you're using your climate control. I mean, there's some times of the year, there's at least one or two days a year we're not using our heater or our air conditioning. Do you know how cold it's been up north?
Oh, I bet it's probably been the teens.
every morning it's the teens. See, I get up at 5 o'clock because Jet, my dog, wakes me up. So I have to go out in the backyard with her. And to walk outside, I look at the temperature, and if it's 12 to 20, I'm going to be a little cold in my boxer shorts and my heavy jacket. I hate to paint that picture for you, but I got slippers on, and I'm just taking the dog outside. So it's pretty doggone cold. If it's north of 45, I'm okay. I don't need a jacket. But anyway, it's been really cold. And we had about 2 inches of snow on that last storm. And that it really got cold. It got down to about 10. We're kind of in the valley, and we've got a lot of water underneath us. Mm-hmm. So we have this inversion, according to the Weather Service, this inversion area where the cold air comes down and camps, because cold is supposed to be heavier than hot.
Yes.
So cold sits down on the ground, and we're kind of in the valley. So it's been really cold. The other morning I woke up, and I went out to the barn to turn on the hose to fill the trough up. The hose was frozen, the valve was frozen, the water was frozen on the horse's trough.
I was going to ask if you had to go out and break the water in the troughs.
I don't
have a heating element for
it? No. Oh, come on. No, it's a matter of taking your fist with a glove and beating. Now, sometimes it'll be an inch thick, and then you have to go get an implement, so to speak. So I got a pipe wrench close by. I just bust it with the pipe wrench. But most of the time, if it's just a real thin layer of ice, the horses will break it with their own stuff. But it's not that bad in the horse arena because the horses hair over during the winter.
Oh, yeah. They got their winter coat on.
Right. They got their winter coat on. And you never see a horse shivering, or at least not above zero as far as I'm concerned. So when we come back, we're going to talk more about the fixing of your car. We've already covered that you have to say to them, is this a guess or a fix? That's a magic question in my mind. Is
that
this
separates
a guess?
The men from the boys for sure.
Oh, yeah. Now, the problem with that is the service rider may jump to that before he walks out. Him or her walks out to ask the tech. That's the sin.
Right.
The service rider really has a responsibility to say, I'll call you back. And they need to go eyeball to eyeball. Now, the service rider typically has little or any mechanical experience. They are a communicator between the shop and the technician and the customer.
Yeah, and they really should be the liaison for the customer.
That's the big problem. So if they don't know the difference and they got a technician who's selling a blower switch and a blower motor every single car, then they have to do that. But anyway, the service rider needs to go check, and they need to say to the technician, is this a guess or a fix? I need to know they're asking. Now, the fallback is this. Ask for your old parts back.
Yep.
There's two reasons. Do you know what the two reasons are that I tell people to ask for their old parts back?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, one is so you can see what they replaced, mm-hmm. and you know that they replaced it.
All right.
But then there's a list of other reasons why you give customer their parts back.
But you don't know the other one.
Well, I do. I know all of them.
Okay.
Well, one is so you're not throwing all that stuff in your dumpster.
And it reduces my trash bill.
Yeah.
People laugh at that, but it's true. I used to have the dumpster dumped 3 times a week, and now I only do it once a week, and they're throwing it in their trash. But it's better for them. So I say to them, keep the old part in the box. We put the old part in. No, we don't give them their fuel filters back
or their
filters. We don't do that. But give them the old part in the box. And then don't throw that away until you're absolutely sure I fixed it. Because if I didn't fix it, I would really like to put your old part back in. I would like to do that.
Obviously, they're not going to hang on to a cabin air filter or an air filter for a month. They're going to look at it. Yes, this is dirty.
Yeah. And that happens sometimes. I remember a guy came back in with his cabin filter, and he was pissed. And he said, I'm mad at you, and this is why. And he shows me the cabin filter. So I turned the cabin filter upside down, and I beat it on the counter. Quite a bit of dirt came out. And he goes, so? And I said, well, let me go get a new one and show you what a new one looks like. But there was no talking to him, so I just gave him his money back. But I also blackballed his file.
Uh-huh.
So he ain't coming back because that was unnecessary. But it's pretty easy, and we usually put those really dirty air filters in a plastic bag or something
right.
like that to protect them from the car. But we want the customer to look at the part. So if we give them an oil pressure switch that's in a plastic bag and it's all oily, and we can show them a new one that doesn't have any oil on it, then that's your oil leak.
Correct.
There's no question. And if not, bring it back. We'll stick it in. We'll put the old one back in, and we'll show you that it is the oil leak. So those are the kinds of things that happen. Anyway, when you talk about good auto repair shops, you have to talk about Air Park Auto. Air Park Auto has been in business since 1985 in the Scottsdale Air Park. They're on Raintree, just east of Hayden, just south of Frank Lloyd Wright. Nadine and Stacy opened up Air Park Auto a long time ago, and Stacy passed away. Nadine decided to stay with the shop. Now, she's been at the front counter for years and years and years. She's been at Stacy's side for 10, 20 years. She knows cars, like my daughter, Andy. Uh-huh. They know cars. The women know cars. To walk up to the front counter and be faced with Nadine might be a mistake if you decide to start talking techie, because she's been there and done that before. Nevertheless, Nadine is a very honest lady. She runs a shop that's dominated by males, and she knows the difference between when she's being lied to and when she's not. So she has a good staff. So if you live in the Air Park area, up in the northeast corner of Scottsdale, which is south of Frank Lloyd Wright or north of Frank Lloyd Wright, and around the 101 and Frank Lloyd Wright, then if you don't have a repair shop, may I suggest that you go to Air Park Auto. And that, like I say, they're on Raintree, just east of Hayden in Scottsdale. His name is Eddie Caruso. My name is Mark Salem. We're having phone problems, so we're talking about cars. We hope you enjoy this, and I apologize that we made this mess.
This station is not responsible for the problems that Mark may cause for the following: wives, mothers, daughters, ex-wives, grandmothers, great-grandmothers, stepmothers, daughters, and in-laws. If you find yourself agreeing with everything Mark says, please seek professional help.
Buckle up and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is Eddie Caruso. He works for me, and we're having phone problems down at the radio station, and so I apologize that you can't call in. But you, if you have a question, a car question, we can bring you on the air through the back door, so to speak. You would send an email to talk, the number two, Salem. Talk to Salem at AOL.com. Just give us your name and your phone number. We're not going to keep track of your phone number, I promise you. And then Renee's going to call Gil, the engineer at the station, and he's going to call you back, and then we're going to put you on the air if you want to do that. We're having problems with the phone lines down at the studio. It's just nobody's fault. Nobody does this on purpose, and we're sorry about that. So Eddie and I were talking about good auto repair, and let me tell you about a good auto repair shop in Phoenix. Bob over at Harker's is a really good diagnostician. He's been around the block, and the, in my opinion, and this is tongue-in-cheek, the really good diagnostician guys actually have gray hair somewhere on their body, usually on their neck or on their mustache or on their head. It's just that we've been around the block, and we've come from points and condensers from the cars in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s to electronic ignition in the mid-70s, all the way up into carburetors that had electronic solenoids, then to fuel injection in 1996, and then ABS and electronic control transmissions and all that other stuff. We've walked that path. We've been there, done that. Larry Harker's Autos at 38th Avenue and Indian School, been in business since 1967. Bob and Ellen own and operate Larry Harker's Auto, and Ellen works the front counter, and she's the wife of Bob, who's the shop foreman, who is the service manager, and who runs the shop. His job is to run the shop, but even more important than that, he's a great diagnostician. So if you live anywhere near 38th Avenue and Indian School, and you need an oil change or auto electrical work, brake service, auto emissions, vehicle maintenance, or you got a check engine light on, may I suggest that Bob over at Harker's would be a great place to go. So we're talking about asking for your old parts back. Uh-huh. And to recap real quick, you ask for your old parts back. The shop's not going to give you the stuff that's going to stink up your car or damage your carpeting. But asking for the old ball joints or asking for the old fan belts or the hoses, asking for the old distributor or the coil, asking for the hard parts back is nothing to be shameful for. You have your old parts, which means the fight is half gone. If the car has the same symptoms, you can go back and say, let's start with you putting my parts back on, my old parts back on, and we'll start over again with a credit for the part.
That's right. Although there are some stipulations. Sometimes if there's a core on a part, the customer, they can pay the core charge and keep the part. Typically what we do is we say, we're not going to send this core back for a month. We're going to put it on our shelf. It's marked with your vehicle, with your invoice number. So you drive it for a month. If everything's fine, then we'll go ahead and send the core back before it gets lost in the shuffle.
And we actually learned that. I actually learned that from another shop. I thought that was a great way to handle it rather than making the customer pay for the core. Basically, we've been charged for $25 for a compressor core, so we'll just hang on to it for 30 days. The end result is if we don't hear from you in 30 days, we're going to assume it's fixed, and we're going to turn the core back in. So we lose that ability to put the old part back on it after 30 days. But it should be obvious if we missed it after the 30 days. So ask for your old parts, ask for your old parts back. Now, one of the things I wish people would do more often is say, you said that my lower control arm bushings are bad. Can you take a picture and send it to me? I'd like a picture before and after. Does that present a problem?
Not at all.
And here's what we've done to combat, not combat that, but to accommodate that is a better word. We have a shop phone now.
Yep.
We have a shop phone. It's an iPhone. And so the technician comes up, gets the iPhone, takes the pictures of before and then after. And most of the times they're going to do a visual where the bearing or the bushing, the lower control arm bushing, is on their bench. So the old one's next to the new one. That's the picture that means something.
And there's a stark difference.
Yeah, yeah. That's what we want to do. So it's kind of everybody has a phone. Everybody can get pictures on their phone. So the idea is take a picture of the two parts together. Motor mounts. You take the motor mount, you got the new one, and you got the old one that's in two pieces.
I was just going to say that.
So, and they're both exactly the same. They both have the same holes in the same locations, and they're both the same height, and they're both the same width, all that stuff. So that's something I wish people would do more often for everybody.
And I tell you what, cell phones are a blessing. I remember having to just visually memorize where vacuum lines went, the way the belts were routed, or draw diagrams on my work order. Now you just take your camera, take a picture of it, and you're home free. Because there are so many times you look at a serpentine belt. Okay, I see how it's routed. You take it off, you go to put it back on, and it's either all of a sudden now it's 6 inches too short or 6 inches too long.
Or, in the meantime, the service writer gave you three more cars. This one doesn't have to be delivered till tomorrow, so you end up going to three other cars, or you're waiting for parts, or there's all those things that happen. Now, I want to tell on you. Not too long ago, you had a two-seater Jaguar in, and it was leaking hydraulic fluid at the top of the windshield over the rearview mirror, somewhere in that area.
Yes.
And it had a convertible top.
Right.
And so you diagnosed it as the hoses that leak from the pump, which is behind the seats. It's actually in the trunk.
Right.
You have to put these two prefabbed lines in. Otherwise, they already have all the bends and the crooks and everything in them.
Pretty much.
Now, the front seat's out, the passenger seat's out, the carpeting's out, and the entire dashboard is out.
Not quite the entire dashboard, but...
Okay. Which part of it? Driver's side?
The lower portion on the left-hand side.
Okay. So, but there's a whole lot of screws sitting on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I start praying that you're not going to die too soon, because I have no idea how to put that back together, neither does anybody else. So it was a very exquisite job, but I saw you taking pictures of that.
Yeah.
And were you doing routing of wire harnesses, routing of the old hoses? What were you taking off?
The way the hoses were routed.
Okay.
They came in from the right rear area of the trunk forward in front of the rear seat.
All right, hold on. It's behind the it's a two-door car.
Yes.
So it's behind the passenger seat, and then it goes towards the dash, but then it makes a left turn.
Right, and it goes over the transmission tunnel in front of the rear seats.
In front of the driver's seat, or to the back of the driver's seat?
Yes.
Okay, and then from there it goes forward and goes up the dashboard, up the A pillar. Okay, the pillar that's to the left of the driver's vision.
Right, the one on the windshield.
Yeah, the one on the windshield. And then from there it goes across the top and connects to the latches or whatever it ran. Okay. So I saw you taking pictures of that, and I was really glad to see that. Because if something happened, if you were out and somebody ran over you, I would be concerned about you, but I would be more concerned about the Jaguar that's in your bay. Now, one of the problems that we run into is when you start taking a dashboard apart, how many different kinds of screws? Now, when I say screws, I'm talking about a specific kind of screw. It's not likely that we're going to have 40 different kinds of screws.
Right.
There's going to be brackets. So there's going to be 10 of these and 4 of these and 9 of these, right? Something
Correct.
Like that. But they're all different.
Right. Some are Phillips head. Some are Torx. Some could be a 10-millimeter, 8-millimeter head.
Took the words right out of my mouth. 7/16 for the American cars, 7/16, 3/8, 5/16, all that stuff. So if you take a picture of all that stuff, then you can put all those screws and bolts in a coffee can. What I used to do is I used to set them where they belonged or I take the part off and put the screws back in the holes.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't work all the time. So you have to take them out anyway.
Right.
Because it doesn't clear the dashboard when you drop down this thing with the 2-inch screw sitting in it. So those kind of create the problem, but the phone does take that,
yeah.
take that away. So you ask for your old parts back. Estimates. I'll deal with estimates because I deal with that all the time. The estimate shouldn't be more than they told you. Shouldn't be.
Right.
If there was a problem, then the service writer should have called you up and said, hey, we found this, we need to do this, and I'm going to add X amount of dollars to your estimate. That should have happened. In my world, this is just my world, there is no way I'm going to accept an estimate, a bill that's one penny over the estimate. I'm just not going to accept it. It's just we're capable, and I'll tell you why I know we're capable, because we've been doing that for 25 years. It's a matter of taking the parts, all your known parts, and all your known labor, and adding those together, and adding between 10 and 15% to that bill. 10% covers sales tax. Then
right.
you've got shop supplies and environmental charges, and you got those covered at the numbers of 10 to 15%. So if we have $300 worth of parts and labor, 10% is $3, right? $30? $30 on $300. And 15% would be another half of that. So you take $45 and add to it. You're always going to come in under your estimate. Always. And there's no excuse not to. Now, every once in a while, they'll make a mistake in the addition or something like that. Or the technician said, I thought I ordered wiper blades. And so, but most of the little stuff we got covered already.
Right.
Because we've overbid it. So coming in under your estimate, I'm going to put you on the spot. But if you don't have a good answer, it's because I put you on the spot. What wads my panties up the most more than being over the estimate? Well, short of damage in a customer's car.
Oh, I'm not sure. Okay. I mean, there are so many waddable issues.
No, there is. Not too long ago, we were working on a 68 Mustang, and they didn't put it in park, and it rolled backwards into the wall and took out the quarter panel. And this guy, he was the original owner of it, and he wanted to sell it. He was a good customer of ours. Man, we were screwed.
2 minutes.
That's all there was. I mean, this car had been unmarked, unwrecked, its whole life, and we just crashed it.
Mm-hmm.
So I said to him, I'll fix it. I'll fix it to your complete satisfaction, or I'll buy it. I didn't have any other choice. We just had that.
Right.
That was our only choice. Now, he wanted to be involved in the repair process, and I was fine with that. And his concern was, is will a magnet still go over the metal, or is the Bondo going to be 2 inches
right.
thick? And in fact, he got to look at the car through the process, and clearly the Bondo was maybe as thick as two pieces of paper because the metal guy was so good
right.
in bringing that back out.
And reforming it.
And he took pictures of it so he could tell the prospective buyer this just recently happened and the repair shop screwed it up. So those are the kinds of things that I don't like.
1 minute.
But I really like it when the customer comes back in and says, I'm here for an oil change, but I just want to let you know that they fixed my air conditioning, 6 months ago and nothing. It's better than it ever has been before. So those kinds of things are kind of important to me. So the successes, and I'm really proud of my guys because they do such a great job. In the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, get the symptoms. Do the right diagnostics. Make absolutely sure your repair is the valid one. Order the parts. Go fix the car and not create anything new.
Correct.
That's the key for me. Don't create anything new. So you go into the dash. You fix the leak, but all of a sudden the wipers don't work. Or all of a sudden the brake lights don't work because you forgot to plug in the brake light switch or something like that. So the key is go in, fix it, but not create anything new. And cars are pretty sophisticated. So going in underneath the dashboard of a Jaguar, a Mercedes, a BMW, a Chevrolet, a Ford, a Chrysler on today's cars, I'm thinking it's a little bit more difficult than going inside the human body where you kind of know where all the parts are at.
Right.
And in your chest, there might be only, 10 parts? and really underneath the dash, there's thousands
yes.
of wires and screws and pieces and all that kind. Now, we don't command the dollars that heart surgeons do. And they'll say to me, Mark, we're different than you. You know why they're going to say that?
Because we work on it while it's running.
That's exactly right. They say, we're going to work on your car while the heart's running. You're not going to be able to work on the car when the car's running. And my response is no, that's not true. We do a lot of our diagnostic and repair when the car is running.
Yes.
We do some of it, but we certainly don't replace the water pump when the car's engine is running. I mean, that's not going to be possible. So, all righty. Talk to Salem, T-A-L-K to Salem at AOL.com. Give me your name and your phone number. And that will get to the radio station, and they'll call you, and we'll get you on the air. But right now, folks, we've got problems with the phone system. And ironically enough, we're talking back and forth through a 56K line, which is a big deal. That's how we're doing the radio show, because we're remote.
Uh-huh.
So we're 10 miles away from the radio station. So the interesting part that people always interested in, and I don't, we've had a radio station in our auto repair shop since 1994.
Yes.
And so we've always broadcast from here. And it's just more comfortable because I don't have to shave this morning. I like it better. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. I'm sorry we're having problems with the phone lines. And there's nothing I can do about it. There's nothing Gil can do about it. There's nothing that any of us can do about it. Until we find the problem and able to fix the bad connection or whatever happened. And for all we know, they could have dug up a phone line down at the end of the street and that caused a problem. The phone line's not on my end. The problem is on the radio station's end. And unfortunately, that's going to affect programming for the rest of the day. But anyway, I want to tell you about Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. It's exactly what the name is, Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. They're at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak in North Phoenix, I should say. They are a good shop that they provide really good service for diehard diesel people in the service, the repair, and the parts industry. They work on both foreign and domestic light-duty diesels. So that includes some cars. But they're strictly diesel, like their name says. They're open Monday through Friday, 8 to 5. And they also sell parts 24 hours a day at their website, Strictly Diesel. And you can get more information from my best car repair shops list under the diesel settings, and that's on our website, marksalem.com. So if you're looking for a good auto repair shop, you can find transmission shops, paint and body shops, mechanical repair shops, stuff like that on our website. And these are shops that I recommend because I've already thoroughly vetted them. Okay. What was I going to ask you?
About customers.
Go ahead.
About customers you might not like to deal with?
That's an easy one for me to answer. And it's no secret that customers aren't going to get along with the business, and the business aren't going to get along with customers.
But not 100%, no. And you have to realize that sometimes a customer has a bad day, too.
Yeah, oh, yeah. And so does Mark.
Yeah.
It usually starts with a customer's bad day. But nevertheless, I don't like the guys that come in and want to dictate the report, the repair,
uh-huh,
but want to hold me or my shop or my wallet responsible for the success of the repair.
Right.
And do you know how I handle that?
No, I don't.
I give them a triple estimate. So if replacing the distributor is what they want to do, and let's say it's $100 normally, I bid it at $300. And that drives them away. I don't have to tell them I'm not going to do what they want me to do. I'm just going to bid it high. I'm going to chase them away with a bid. Because if that doesn't work, they don't want to pay for the repair, even though they're dictating the repair.
Uh-huh.
So I'm not playing that game. Women never do that. And sometimes, well, I say never. Every once in a while, a woman will come in and tell me what her husband wants to do. And I'll explain to her that that's a bad idea.
Same thing as going on the internet, and this is what my car needs.
Oh, that's a problem. That's a problem. And I think the answer to that, I think I've been able to fine-tune that answer. You're going to spend your hard-earned money on a guess from someone you have no idea who they are, where they're from, or the level of their skills. No more than if somebody said you have heartburn and to drink a gallon of gas. That's pretty stupid. But there's all kinds of people out there. And I'll give you plenty of time. I myself go to the internet to look and see. Just to look and see. So I'm faced with a problem with a steel chainsaw not too long ago.
Okay.
And so I go on the internet and I check to see what everybody says. Well, it doesn't start. So let's put a coil in it. Let's put a spark plug in it. You might have to put a new piston and rings because it doesn't have enough compression. The muffler or the spark arrestor could be plugged up.
Right, with carbon.
Yeah, so it's a fuel or a spark or an exhaust or an intake. The air filter's dirty. They're all guesses.
Or the carburetor could be falling off of it.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead and make fun of me. Folks, what happened was is I found an old blower at the shop, and it was a Poulan, P-O-U-L-A-N, L-O-N or something. And they make fun of it. They don't even make it anymore. But they made fun of it because on a Poulan, all you did is spend your time pulling on it. So I took it up to the ranch because I needed a blower. And I'm a mechanical guy. I can fix anything except the crack of dawn and a broken heart. So intermittently, this thing would start first time, every time. And then intermittently, I could pull on that thing until my next birthday, and I couldn't get that thing running. And I worked on that thing for 2 months. And I did what everybody else did. I got on the internet. But nobody had the answer. So I thought, it has to be the carburetor. So I put a carburetor on it for $45 through Amazon, and that was a waste of my money. But I was pulling on it one day, and I saw the carburetor move. So I thought, I know I tightened that carburetor up. Well, folks, the carburetor's attached to the cylinder on a two-stroke motor, and the cylinder's attached to the engine block. And the inside of the engine block is part of what a two-stroke motor starts and runs with. Is that fair?
Yes.
Okay. So I figured out that the carburetor was moving because the whole cylinder was moving. So I took the cowling, all the plastic off of the motor area. And lo and behold, the two bolts that hold the cylinder to the engine block had backed off. And I'm thinking to myself, how can that cause an intermittent problem? So I take a real thin-walled 8mm, and I drop it down the two slots, and I tighten up the two holes. And not only is that blower fixed, but my wife, that's her favorite one because it starts on the first pull. Of course, it has a new carburetor on it. So, but you know what? Nowhere did I ever find that on any expert on the internet.
Right.
I never found. Somebody said, hey, the cylinder came loose. And no one ever came up with an intermittent problem. Like I had. Sometimes it would start on the first pull, and sometimes you could pull it until you were dead, and it wouldn't start. But now I can explain that.
Right. You have first-hand knowledge now.
Right. And it's the same way. I'll take you another good example is the big truck I have, the Volvo.
Uh-huh.
The dashboard. It goes out. You call 20 different shops, and they all got a different idea. But I already know what's wrong with it because I've already replaced the dash for the same problem before. It's the instrument cluster.
Uh-huh.
So now I went on the internet and I sent a bunch of emails to all these places that repair instrument clusters to see if they can repair this $2,900 instrument panel I'm faced with. So that's what the last one cost me.
And can they do it?
I got emails out.
Okay.
So I did that last night late.
So I mean, that kind of stuff happens to us too. The cluster was working a week ago and all of a sudden we didn't do anything and you turn the key on and we got nothing.
That's not the truth. The cluster was working fine until you went out and worked that. Never mind that you were working on the back of the hitch. Never mind you were putting weather stripping on the compartments.
On the doors.
This is a semi-truck we're talking about, folks. Yeah, I haul my equipment, my backhoes and my tractors and stuff on it. So you were working on that whole thing, fixing air leaks underneath the dash and everything else, and it was working fine until you touched it. And so I think I may just put $2,800 on your truss. But I had that problem before, so I've walked that path. So I know it's not your fault. All righty, we'll be back right after this talking about cars. Our phone lines are down. I'm sorry, that's the best I can offer you.
The dream of Henry Ford.
Well, welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is Eddie Caruso, and we're both here just talking about cars in front of you because right now our phone lines are dead, and they have been now for almost 3 hours. So I want to apologize for that. I also want to tell you about Action Auto Repair because if Tom from Action was down there at the station, he'd fix this problem. But anyway, Tom from Action Auto is a good friend of mine. He's located at I-17 and Deer Valley Road. He's on the northwest corner of that intersection. He's a full-service, family-owned auto repair shop that served the Deer Valley and North Phoenix area since 1983. And whatever your repair needs are, Tom and his staff are well-known for being able to communicate with you and get your car fixed And they're also capable of, like many of us are, of telling you that we aren't the best guy for your problem and then recommending you talk to this shop because we know they're better than we are on your particular car. So Tom, again, is at I-17 in Deer Valley. He has ASC Master Certified Technicians. He's got a BMW Master Tech there that works there. So if you have a Beamer and you're looking for somebody who knows Beamers inside and out, then Action Auto Repair would be a place I would go. Like I said, up there on I-17 in Deer Valley. It's Action Auto Repair. Okay.
Well, hey, I'm going to stand up for myself and with your Volvo. Yes, okay. I was working on the doors.
Yeah.
I was working underneath the dash and to the right of the cluster. So if it's my fault, then I'll stand up and I'll take the blame. But I'm going to use your words that we don't know whose fault it is until we know what it is.
You're exactly right. I do use those words all the time. You're exactly right. Folks, the background, for those of you that may have just tuned in, is that I have a big truck. I have a semi. And its name is Clifford.
Clifford, the big red truck.
The big red dog. Yeah, Clifford, the big red dog. And I asked Eddie to do some stuff for me while I was out of town. I asked him to put new weather stripping on the doors of the box, the utility box on the back. I asked you to fix a couple of air leaks underneath the dash that caused the rear end to sag. I asked you and Alan to have the hitch area in the rear bumper undercoated with the black stuff.
Bedliner.
Bedliner, thank you. And I think that was about it.
Yep.
So at the end of the day, the instrument cluster, the whole dashboard went crazy on us. The gauges were flapping around and all that kind of stuff. And so I was teasing you by saying, it's your fault because you're the last one that touched my truck. And the last time I had to buy an instrument cluster was like $2,900. And I was talking about how I'm trying to shortcut that circuit and find somebody who might be able to fix my instrument cluster then rather than pay $3,000 for a new one. And so, and you're right, I say to customers and I say to the technicians, no one knows whose fault it is until it, quote, unquote, it has been found and fixed.
Right.
So it's not uncommon for me to be faced with that, at least probably once a month, where a customer will come in and say, you changed the oil in my car, now my air conditioning doesn't work. Well, we have to figure out how the air conditioning doesn't work before we can say whose fault it is. Because it could have been our fault. Can you think of a way an oil change would have caused the air conditioning to quit?
Absolutely. If we have to reach up in there and grab the oil filter and we knock the connector off of either the high pressure switch or the connector on the compressor clutch coil?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We could have easily done that, but we don't know. So it's not like we can't say it's not our fault till we know what it is. And so we have to, under those circumstances, we have to diagnose it for free. But under the situation where the car was in on Monday and the car is back on Tuesday, that typically indicates everything we need to know.
Right.
It's something we probably caused.
Yeah. If it's the middle of the summer and they come back 2 weeks later and say, now my AC is not working after you did my oil change 2 weeks ago,
it's a little bit suspect.
Right.
Because it's been 2 weeks and you just found out your air conditioning working is July. So
it can even go the other way, too. Say it's the beginning of fall and they don't have to use their air conditioning because we've had kind of a cool spell, and all of a sudden it heats up again, and 3 weeks later, they need to use their air conditioning to turn it on, and it's not working. And
but
we were the last one to work on it.
It's
funny because I'm a sensuous guy.
Uh-huh.
They said, since you was working on my car, this isn't working anymore.
Yeah. No, you're right.
Since you was working on my car.
Yep. No, it happens. Mm-hmm. But like I said, now, the same thing. Ever since you worked on my car, the air conditioning doesn't work, and so we find the hoses blown off the back of the compressor. Or we find a bad leak. Or we find out the low-pressure switch has shut the system down because it doesn't have enough freon in it. Those are answers.
Yep.
We didn't suck the freon out of your car. You know, it is what it is. We didn't touch your air conditioning. Or your switch is bad. Look here, I can feed power to the compressor and get it, the accumulator to get cold.
Mm-hmm.
So the switch underneath the dash is bad. So we have to go back in there. We'll get it and take it out and fix it for you, but we're not going to pay for it. But like I said, we have to diagnose it first before we can determine. So we're going to have to spend a little bit of time before we can say it's not our fault.
Right.
Because it could easily be our fault. So those are the kinds of things. Now, pay with a credit card or cash or a check?
Credit card always.
Why?
Because that way you can dispute that charge if the repair isn't what you thought it was going to be. The credit card company is going to be working on your behalf.
Well, not only, yeah, you're right about that. Here's the issue. The issue is I can't tell MasterCard and Visa and Discover and all those, I can't tell them to go pound sand because 98% of the customers use a credit card. So I can't tell them, forget it, I'll just cut the cord on this machine. Then what am I going to do? So with a credit card, you have an opportunity to gauge the success of the repair. That's the easy part. You can't do that with a check, and you can't do that with cash. But most shops are going to stand up, and they're not going to look to see how you paid your bill. But it does give you an added layer of protection.
Yes.
So I remember a customer having a transmission overhauled for a specific symptom, and the transmission didn't fix it. The shop said tough. So the customer went and had another shop look at it, and there was a bad wiring harness that went to this transmission. So they replaced the harness, and the problem was solved. So that $1,800 overhaul had nothing to do with this. So they stopped payment, or they asked the credit card to backcharge them. Then they went to court. The judge found in the customer's favor. And so when MasterCard and Visa got that documentation, they said, we're not going to, he's going to keep the money.
Right.
And it's that's not what it's supposed to be. So it's that kind of a thing. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk more common sense about car repair. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is Eddie Caruso, and both of us have quite a few years' experience. When did you first start working on cars? Was it a gas station that you got your start? And what year was that?
That was in 1985.
Okay. I started as a gas pump jockey in 1968 when gas was 27, 29, and 31. And I started on the self helping people on the self-serve island. Uh-huh. Then they moved me to the full-service island where you had to check hood. Then I got to do tire repairs. Then I did oil changes. And from there, I just kind of blossomed. Ken Vivian, who's now deceased, was my first boss, and he taught me a lot. I owe a lot to him. Then from there, I graduated high school, became a policeman for about 10 years, and then I left there to be a car guy again. So in 1979, we opened up a gas station again, but I owned it this time, and then we opened up Salem Boys in 1994. And that's, I think, you were with us since
1989.
89, okay. So we're talking about cars, and speaking about cars, let me tell you about a good repair shop up on I-17 in Bell, and that's Kurtz Auto Repair. Kurtz Auto Repair, Jeff and Eric are two master technicians. One of them is a service writer, and one of them runs the shop. Frankly, folks, they have pulled a rabbit out of their hat as much as anybody I know because they're clear across town from my shop, and so when someone asks me for some help that's anywhere near I-17 and Bell, I'm happy to send them to Kurtz. And Kurtz, again, creates the telephone call that I really enjoy, that I took my car to Kurtz, and this is what they did, and they fixed my problem. And they were good guys and a pleasure to do business with. So if you live near I-17 in Bell, then Kurtz, who's been around since 1987, he works on domestic import, both gas and diesel, and he's a good guy, and his staff are good people. So we've been through, ask him if we're guessing with my money or yours, and we went through stuff that is appropriate to guess, for the shop to guess. We went through how to pay for it and why to ask for your old parts.
Right.
So what distinguishes the kind of customer that walks in the door that we all, that everybody likes?
Well, I mean, it's...
You haven't been on the front counter much, but let me answer some of it. First of all, the customer that comes in and gives you the symptoms. That's kind of an important consideration.
Right.
Give me the symptoms. Tell me what it's doing.
Give me as much information as you can, but don't bend my ear for 20 minutes. I'll disseminate what I feel I need to know, but give me everything that you can give me.
And let's have dialogue.
Right.
So let's give and take. I have a vibration. The next question I'm going to ask you, and I'll tell you, I'm going to kind of toot her horn real quick. Her birthday's tomorrow.
Yep.
And my daughter, Andy, she has been around this business since she was 11. And she has front counter skills that many men don't have. So she's good at the give and take.
Yes.
And women endear themselves to her because she's good at the give and take. Her title is CEO. She runs the operation. But in reality, she's been around cars longer than most of the guys that work for me have been around cars. So she likes that give and take. I have a vibration. Okay, well, stop there. does it wiggle the steering wheel or the seat of your pants? And the answer, all the time or some of the time? Oh, it's speed related. Oh, is it speed related or is it idle? No, at idle.
Uh-huh.
So she's honing in on the vibration. I've already given you two big clues. It only happens at idle, and it shakes the steering wheel. Tell me where you're going.
Well, it's... It
you're the technician that I just dispatched that to.
Well, I would rather you let me go for a ride with the customer first.
Absolutely, but I'm going to duck that.
Okay.
Because, all right, I'm putting it... The car vibrates.
Okay.
And it shakes the steering wheel.
Okay.
And it's stopped.
Is it in gear or out of gear?
That's the question she would have asked.
Right.
Because if it's in gear, it's a...
And we're looking at an engine mount.
And motor mount.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And if it's in neutral...
Then it could, and it's vibrating the steering wheel?
Yeah.
Well,
Wait, let me change it, though. Maybe she said steering wheel, but she meant the entire car or this dashboard area.
Okay.
Or the steering wheel's shaken, but she didn't put her hand on the dash. She didn't put her hands on the passenger seat. Those are the kinds of things. So those are the kinds of we need to weed out. But that kind of give and take is so important.
Oh, yes.
So it's does it do it fast or slow? Does it have anything to do with the temperature? Is it within the first 5 minutes of driving your car cold, or is it after it fully heats up? Does the air conditioning, when it stops blowing, does it stop blowing, or does it stop blowing cold?
Right.
So we have to ask those tough questions because everybody has a perception on what we're asking them.
Right, and when the customer says it won't start, okay, are you saying that it will crank but it won't start?
Okay,
or it doesn't crank at all. I know you use the term catch.
Yeah. And I'm trying to use words. Cranking, a lot of times they don't understand crank. So I go, does it go rrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrr noise happens. So it's kind of to reduce it to something, because a lot of people don't have the car experience that we have. So when they come in and say that it doesn't start, you have to ask them, does it crank over and not catch, not start? Or when you say it doesn't start, when you hit the key, there's no noise, there's no click, there's no rrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrr So if it goes and it doesn't start, it's spark or fuel. Correct?
Correct.
All right. If it doesn't crank, how many things can it be?
Yeah. It starts from the ignition switch to...
Go ahead.
Well, actually, we'll start with the battery.
Okay.
From the battery to the battery cable.
Okay.
To the cable on the terminal.
Okay.
Up to the fuse box, to the ignition switch, to the neutral safety switch.
We have to follow the electricity.
Right.
Battery through the electrical circuit. Comes up through the fuse block, feeds the key switch, then it goes through the park neutral switch, then it goes to the solenoid. And right. It might go through a brake switch because you're supposed to have your foot on the brake or whatever.
Yeah, because nowadays there's just a button on a lot of the cars on the dash. You just press and it starts.
Right.
And it will, you press it once and it will crank for, if it's not going to start, it will crank for 10 seconds trying to get it. And there's nothing you can do to stop it from cranking.
That's right. That's
same thing with some of the ones that have the conventional ignition switch. You turn it to run. You could just tap it and release it, and it's just going to sit there and go until it starts or it won't start.
And those are the things we need.
Right.
That's the information we need. That's part of the give and take part of all of that. Let me tell you about a give and take. Thompson's Auto Repair is in Mesa. Not too long ago, they had an air conditioning issue. And it was something that he asked for a second opinion on. And so we looked at it for him. And between the two of us, we got the car fixed.
Okay.
But what happened was, is the customer gave... What we think is two different stories, but we don't think it was on purpose. We just think the question was answered differently. So we were working on this end of the air conditioning,
right.
But he was working on the other end. And when we decided that we're working on west and he's working on east, we needed to figure that out. So another conversation with the customer cleared that up. So the car got fixed. But it's one of three people made that mistake. Me, Thompson's, or the customer.
Right.
And it's not important who made the mistake. It's just that we overcame it. So that conversation is important. So the customer answering the questions and asking give or take. So we have to have give or take on air conditionings. We have to have give or take on dying and stalling.
Right.
So when you come up to a traffic light, remember this. I'm going to give you these symptoms. Every time I get off the freeway, the engine dies.
Okay.
I'm standing here. I'm the customer.
What type of vehicle is it?
It's a General Motors front-wheel drive.
Okay.
I'm feeding you this simple. Okay.
I got it.
All right. But all right, I'll be the customer. I get off the freeway, and it's dead. When I come to a stop, it dies.
Uh-huh.
And then I put it in park, and I start it up, and it starts. The main engine runs fine.
Okay.
Then I put it in drive, and it dies again. And I do that 3 or 4 times. The people behind me are honking at me, and I can't get the car to move. It starts and runs until I put it in a drive, and then it just shuts off.
Okay.
Explain it.
Well, there's a lockup cylinder for the torque converter.
In the transmission. And it's locked it into gear.
Right. It has locked the engine to the transmission.
Yep.
Just the same as if you had a manual transmission and you didn't depress the clutch to disengage the engine from the transmission.
So the feeling that they left out was, as I'm coming up off the on-ramp, off the exit ramp on the freeway, as I start to approach the stop with my foot on the brake, it feels like I'm coming to a stop in fourth gear on a manual transmission without pushing in the clutch.
Yes.
Dot, 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 dot. And it's dead. So in reality, the transmission is locked to itself, not to the motor, because it still cranks over and it still runs. But when you put it into drive, it's direct drive.
Yes.
There's no transmission in there. When you put it into drive, and then people will say, well, finally, I'll just rev the heck out of it, throw it into drive, and burn the tires, and all of a sudden it's fine. And they've just jerked the converter.
Uh-huh.
Now, how many of those did we see before we ever figured that out? And it was intermittent, too.
Yeah.
And it only happened when we got off the freeway. So I remember Al Kitts, God bless him. He's still alive, but he was a mentor of mine. Oh, man, he owned a car repair shop called Kitts Automotive. He was a stud. I'll tell you 2 stories about him. So he says, just disconnect the TCC, the torque converter lockup wire harness right here, and have him drive it for a day or a week or a month. I'm going to tell you right now, the problem's going to go away. Okay, Al. So I did. Every problem went away. Every single one of them went away. Every single one of them. So then you go in and you replace the TCC switch. Isn't that what we did?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we replaced the switch. When I was first in the gas station business, I owned a gas station, we did a water pump on a Ford. And we couldn't get it to stop overheating. It didn't come in for an overheat. It didn't come in for that. It came in for a water leak. So we did replace the water pump, and we couldn't get it to stop overheating. City driving, highway driving, fast, slow, AC off, AC on, and it was never a situation that had anything to do with the water pump. And we couldn't fix it. We did head gaskets for free. We did a radiator for free. We redid the water pump for free. I spent $1,000 on that
car. Wow.
And we could never figure it out. And around town, it wasn't too bad, but you get on the freeway, you could go 3 miles and that gauge would peg. And we put a fan clutch on it. This was like, I don't know, 89 Grand Marquis or something like that. It was an F car. I want to remind you of that, an F car. So I finally just give up, and I drive it over to Al's. And I said, this is what I've done. I just told him what I told you. So he's a pop the hood, and he walks over, and he fixes it. And he shuts the hood, and he goes, there you go, son. And I said, come on. He goes, I just fixed it. So I didn't believe him. And I was so brokenhearted. So I get on the freeway, and I got to drive 3 miles to my place. So I get on the freeway, and I decide to go to Williamsfield Road. And from there, I went down to Riggs Road. And from there, I got halfway to Casa Grande, and the gauge and I got over half. He fixed it. He fixed it in the time it took me to open the hood, count to 10, and close it. Any idea?
Wow. No.
Okay. There's a thermo switch next to the thermostat.
Uh-huh.
And it has 3 ports. The middle one's the distributor, and the top one is vacuum all the time, and the bottom one's no vacuum. It's an emissions control device. We had switched those vacuum lines inadvertently. We didn't put them back on right. So the distributor would never advance. So at highway speeds, it never had any advance,
okay,
which means it overheated. He switched 3 vacuum lines. And from then on, he walked on water as far as I was concerned. He was a stud. And he still is. Him and his brother Alvin. It was Al Kitts and his brother Alvin. Those are guys that were mentors of mine. Bob Stewart, Jack Harris, Ken Vivian. Schumann, Dick Schumann. All those guys were heroes of mine because they mentored me free. And they just, you know, we got along, but I could always lean on them. So I owe the knowledge I have to them and all the guys that worked for me. Speaking of good guys, Thompson's Auto Repair, I told you about them. They're on Main Street just east of Stapley. They're under construction right now because they're running that
light rail
right down the middle of the street. Kind of hard to get in and out of there, but Thompson's been around since 1970. Brian and Thelma own it. They're the second generation, and they're going to keep your vehicle in tip-top shape. They're really good at diagnostics, and they're really good people. So if you're in Mesa and you don't have a repair shop, may I suggest Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Another thing, too, is they're the only shop in Mesa that's passed the muster. Mark Salem has the sheet for the muster. So you got to have so many years of experience. You got to have a clean, better business bureau record, and you have to have good financials, and you have to have insurance. I make sure that you're protected as customers. So Thompson's is the only place that's applied that's passed. Now, there's some good shops in Mesa.
1 minute.
Maybe they haven't applied. I don't know. Uh-huh. But Thompson has passed the musters. I've turned more than a few of them down for not having one of the requirements. The most common is that they're brand new in business. I don't think you're really going to be good working on cars as an owner until you have 5 years.
Right.
You're going to make all your mistakes and learn fast.
Right. And sometimes you may not make it to 5 years.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the guess right there. So I tell folks it's not a good idea to go for a big job to somebody who's only been in business a year because he may not be in business when you need warranty work. So that's the issue. Nevertheless, my email address is mark@marksalem.com. You're welcome to send me your questions. If you would give me your phone number, sometimes I'd rather call you than type. So if you would include your phone number to mark@marksalem.com, I'd like to call you. Give me hours that you'd like to call me. In addition to that, I'm going to call you from a block number. And as soon as you answer, I'm going to say, this is Mark Salem, and so that you'll know not to hang up to me. I'll see you next Saturday. Hopefully we won't have phone problems. I'll see you then.